Hi, I'm Danny.
And I'm Gabby.
And this is Clashes, a podcast exploring culture shock in all its chaotic forms.
We know a good shock can shake things up.
So we blew up our lives and crash landed in Paris.
With a delusional sense of hope.
And a dangerous red habit.
I feel attacked. But culture shock isn't just about changing countries.
Almost. It's about embracing the unknown.
From navigating friendships in your 30s.
Awkward. To processing pop culture's oddest obsessions.
So buckle up and embrace the chaos.
One clash at a time.
Welcome back.
Hello, everyone.
Happy Saturday. Just kidding. It's actually Wednesday, but we're recording this on Saturday.
I was like, what? Confused for a second.
I'm so happy. I'm not having to work today.
I know. I did have to work a little bit. It was fine. It was fun.
Danny's like hustling on the weekends.
I'm so tired.
What are you doing?
I'm working for a company that I don't want to name. Not because I want to be mysterious. If you
You're
go to my
professional,
LinkedIn.
I feel like I just like cite every brand I work
with. Well, because I'm just doing like a 3-month contract with them. So I don't know. But I mean, if you go on my LinkedIn or my Instagram, you'll find
you
out
already
very
updated
quickly.
Your LinkedIn.
I was trying to take advantage of like the media buzz. I'm like, let me jump on this bandwagon. Like, I'm so excited to let everyone know I'm working
on this. You
did that? Yeah.
I reposted something this week on LinkedIn and I literally feel like a little part of my soul just like escaped my body.
I don't understand why we need it. And I hate that you have to like.
It's like everything I hate about the world.
Me too. Yeah. And every time I go on there, I'm like, I hate everything about everyone here.
So fake and weird.
And that was me.
You think Instagram's fake? You think TikTok's fake? I think LinkedIn.
It's like everyone is like a psychopath and a narcissist.
Do you know my ex, RIP, used to literally like scroll LinkedIn in his free time? Like the way that
we met a LinkedIn influencer?
No. But I do know they exist. I've had to stalk a couple. Yeah. They exist.
Okay, to be fair, I do know there is some value to it. Like, I know.
No, but Danny, there's like a ton of value.
I know.
People get tons of jobs from LinkedIn just like talking out of their ass.
Couldn't be me. I update my LinkedIn once a year.
Sometimes I'll be at a job for like 2 years before I'll update my LinkedIn. I'm like, I'm at the job. Why do I need to update my LinkedIn?
I realize I put on my LinkedIn, I left my last position, and I forgot that, like, I guess I had like my freelancing thing on, but it was set to New York.
Oh,
and so like someone messaged like, oh, I had a job for you, but you're in New York. And I was like, what? And then I was like, oh, fuck, I didn't even update this. Right.
Do you know, I keep mine in New York because I get more inquiries.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
In New York. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm working on this project.
You're working with really cool people.
Yeah. I'm basically working with all these locals who are hosting tours and doing all these things. So this morning I was at Le Pouce at the flea market in Paris. And it was actually really cool because it's like a maze in there. It's huge. And like, if you don't know where to go, it could be very overwhelming.
Yeah.
Agreed. And I loved how she divided it up because it was like, she showed us like all the different markets. Cause there's like markets within markets and they're all like specialized in certain things. And then she showed us like the chaotic one, which is if you take the metro there, it's like where it leaves you off.
I know. You have to get through this like mass chaos. I know. And like, watch your phone.
Yeah. And the thing is like, it's true. Like if you don't know any better and you get off the metro and you just see that, you're like, what the fuck is this?
Oh, it's like a junk market.
Yeah. And it's like all the fakes and they have like fake Ami, fake like Lacoste, like all these brands here. I'm like, they have fake Nike. And I was like, why do we need fake Nike?
The first time I ever went was with my dad when I was a teen. And I was like, what the hell? And I got my phone stolen the first time I ever went.
No.
And I was like, what did you lead me into? And then you get into the rich people area, which
is
like a
whole
other world.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, no, it was really, really cool. So that's what I was doing this morning and yeah, it was cool. And then we did one together yesterday. We went vintage shopping and
I actually bought stuff.
Me too.
Yeah, I really didn't need anything, but
me either.
Here we go again.
But yeah, so it's been fun. It's been a fun project, but it's been definitely hectic. I haven't had like full-time consistent work in like a long time, so it's been
you're also working insane hours.
Yeah, it's been wild, but it's because it's a fun project. It's like, okay, crazy hours, but I'm having fun kind of thing. But yeah, it kind of brings me back to the question of like, I can't believe I had a 9-to-5 at one point. How the hell did I do this?
As we've discussed, 9-to-5 plus other shit on top of it.
And like a social life.
Yeah.
And like, how do we go out and like how to draw? And like, you have to go to the office every day.
No.
Like COVID really broke our brains.
Broke everything. Except now that when I hang out with Gen Z, I'm like, it's okay. I feel like I still have my wits about me a little bit more.
That's another topic for another podcast episode. But yeah, no. So that's what I was doing this morning. And then you and I went to a really cool spot.
We had such a fun lunch yesterday.
It was so good.
We had matzo ball soup.
Yeah,
we had latkes.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah, it was really good. It was called Cafe.
Oh, I had a salad. I was like, what did I have?
Yeah, you were healthy.
Well, I love a good salad. So whenever I see it on the menu, I was like, this is going to be good. Because basically the chef is American. That's what we discovered. Mm-hmm. And so
everything was didn't know that even though we discussed it. Yeah.
Yeah. And the food was really good. The place is really cool too. Like the design.
It's convenient. It's by the canal. It's also just so fun to have like latkes in Paris.
Yeah. They had an Arnold Palmer on the menu. I was like,
next time I go to Beckham, I need to drink a cocktail next time I go.
Yeah, I want to go for dinner. I don't know if they have a different menu, but it was really good.
Maybe. Yeah, it was really good. Well, today we're talking about a question that we get asked. I would say I get this asked this probably once a week.
Damn.
If not more. It's come up a lot recently. Really? And I don't know what's in the zeitgeist that the questions come up so much.
I think a lot of people are moving here.
And I think it's the number one thing. For example, when I moved to New York, everyone said to me, well, like New Yorkers are so brash and also the city is disgusting and dirty. Now, they were right about one of those things, which is disgusting. The city is disgusting and dirty. But I never really found New Yorkers that brash. But when I was about to move here, everyone said Parisians are really rude.
Yeah. Is it Parisians or French people?
Parisians, because okay. I also think that French people say Parisians are rude.
True. No one likes Parisians, but Parisians.
Exactly. No one likes Parisians, but Parisians. I'm trying to be more cognizant of that because every time we say French people, I know that there's people like in Antibes who are like, we're so friendly, I don't get it. But we're going to talk about what does that mean? Like, is it true? Are French people rude? I feel like both of us have been here long enough that we've been able to see things through both sides. Like, you're obviously married to a French guy. I have one French friend. I mean, just kidding. I have encountered more French people. But I think it's interesting because I am a self-proclaimed very irritable person. But
you're also a golden retriever.
It's both. Not to get like too much into my therapy, but I realized a lot of the anger that comes from like being a golden retriever in an environment with non-golden retrievers is that I expect everyone to act the way I act. So if I go out of my way to step off the sidewalk for someone, I would expect they do the same.
Yeah. Or at least like a thank you.
Or at least not a shove me back into the bike lane type of vibe. And then I realized like living in the city, I'm not going to get that. And so I think for a while I just saw anything that is not the way I behave as rude.
Right.
And it's not true. And so I've used a lot of self-talk and also trying to come at things from the Parisian perspective to try to not be so angry and judgmental, but just understand the things that they're doing, they don't see as rude. In fact, they might see the same things I see them doing as rude as actually polite.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Socially, you know, like as social etiquette.
I think they're cats and you're a dog. Like you're a golden retriever and they like come off as cats. They're like, I'll be nice to you when I feel like
especially
it.
Especially with friendship.
Yeah. That's how I feel.
What about you?
I used to think, not French people, Parisians specifically. I used to think they were super rude because the first time I came to Paris, I had like an awful experience.
Oh, yeah, you've talked about
that. So I was just like, what is up with these people? So I definitely was on that. I thought that. And then when I started dating Paul and the more I've been in a French family, I realized that, like you said, it's like it's more nuanced than that. It's not like they're rude or they don't like you. It's like culturally we're just like very different. Mm-hmm. And the things that they do that to them are like polite or normal might come off as like or might appear rude to like an American. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes, like you said, I don't think it's like a yes or no answer. I think it's like more nuanced than that. And I think the key is to figure out, how are we different? And is this a personal attack? And I would say like 90% of the time, it's not.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's but just, reframing our brain that way is so important. Otherwise, you kind of can't survive here. Or you're
and
just
you forget
angry
it.
All the time.
You forget it because at the end of the day, you're human and you're emotional. And it's like if someone says something that appears rude to you, you're going to take it personally. Yeah. So yeah, like you said, it's just reframing it. But before we get into the whole thing, like one thing that helped me understand, especially in the workplace a lot of like, do they hate me? Was reading that book, The Culture Map, because it really kind of breaks down the cultural differences in the workplace and how someone telling you like, hey, your deck sucks. It's not actually like an insult. It's just the way that they're used to giving feedback, like direct feedback. Whereas
I don't know what they would say.
Well, no, I know. But like an American would be like, sucks. Hey, girl, you look cute today. I love your outfit. By the way, can you make a quick change to your deck? Whereas like a French person would be like, hey, what is this? I don't understand what you put there. Like, why would you put that there? And then so that's like the difference in like, I think, communication. Like, I think we need to stop taking everything as a personal attack. And I say that as someone who constantly took everything as a personal attack in corporate life. But you need to kind of take a step back and be like, it's just, we're just not talking the same language.
The book is really good if you guys haven't read it, called The Culture Map, and it's by an American woman who moves to France, but it's about all different cultures. Yes. And so at the time I was working with a Japanese client and it really helped me. I was working with someone from Mexico and it really helped me. And I think it just really rates every culture on a spectrum with different criteria. I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's good for developing.
It's super helpful. I almost wish there was like a social one. Like, not a corporate one.
Oh, yeah.
Like social settings. Yeah, friendships and like going out to dinner. Yeah, like something. I'm still.
How do you give a compliment in each culture?
I am still upset that I don't get
compliments. Yeah. You should redo your complaint this week
for your spiral. That's going to be my spiral. I'm like, I haven't gotten a single outfit compliment in. When was the last time I was in New York? A year. It's been a year. I haven't been to New York in a year. That's insane. Actually, Paul told me the other day that I look cute, and I was like, aww. But I was like, damn, I must look really cute because I never get
a year from him. Yeah,
no, he will compliment me, but he won't compliment me unless he meets it, which
unless you're wearing all beige.
Yeah, like I have to have like the minimalistic outfit and be like, wow, that's a cool outfit. I'm like, okay, sure.
Anyway, okay, so the first topic we're gonna dive into is smiling.
This is a big one for you.
And warmth. Yeah. It's one of the ones that it's been so hard for me to make friends here and also just to get along with strangers. And I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I've been told multiple times that I don't look intelligent when I smile, and that smiling.
Who's like, told you this?
Yeah, multiple people. And that when like I smile,
friends people?
Yes. What? And that when I smile, it's off-putting.
What?
And so there's a couple of different things behind this. I think at first I just was like, everyone here is miserable. How are they not smiling?
Right.
More and more I've started to understand French people have... Now, I'm going to go back to French people because I do believe this is universal for French, but a much clearer delineation between their private life and their public life. So you see this with friendships too. They aren't going to be initially warm to you until you've kind of like passed over this like barrier between public and private.
Right.
And then they're warm and they open up a bit more. I've also noticed if you meet someone who's a friend of a friend, if you're kind of grandfathered in.
Right.
You know, also I was told here, like, you have to date someone and then they'll introduce you to their friends. You get a little bit of a shortcut to some of that warmth and some of that private life.
They're so private.
They're so private. Crazy. But they're not going to be super smiley with you. And it's not like in the US, I feel like it's such a social lubricant. Like, it's something that makes people open up and it makes people comfortable. And if you don't smile when you go to a shop or if in your job, it obviously would be extremely off-putting and could lead to an odd social situation. But here it's one of those things that's reserved for, it's kind of considered intimate. And it's also considered a little bit suspicious if you do it too quickly. So,
or if you're like nice too quickly, they're like, yeah, like if you smile this strangely,
exactly. They think, what do you want from me? Which is shitty because obviously it doesn't feel like I'm doing it for that reason.
Right. But again, it's so interesting, the context, right? That if you smile at someone, they're like, what the fuck? What do you want from me? Mm-hmm. And in your mind, you're like, I'm smiling at you. Why are you being rude? It's just so funny to see like the two different
mindsets. It's two opposite things. And also the instinct of it. Because like for us, it's instinct. So this isn't even.
Can you imagine being like any city in the United States and smiling at someone and they don't smile back? I'll be like, why do you hate me?
Oh, it's so
strange. Here I'm like, it's just another Tuesday.
Oh my God. Literally, it's constant. But Danny and I were doing some interesting. So basically, I've had an obsession for a while of trying to understand some of the historical
where
roots.
It comes from, yeah,
because it must come from somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
And one of the things we better understood is that during like this age of, I don't know, like enlightenment that they had with all the writers, kind of snobby like Descartes, Voltaire, etc., they really valued rationality, control, self-mastery, just really not doing anything that felt erratic, egregious, like
everything
overly
had
passionate.
To have a reason.
Yes.
There's no emotional thinking.
Yeah. And just also like true self-control. Whereas like romanticism that was bigger elsewhere was more of like a culture of excess, you know, like a culture of like a lot of passion and emotion. And the way that French people kind of have been raised over the course of the generations is like that kind of thing is messy, it's sloppy,
that's
it's
so
out of
true.
control. And so like when we're like, hi guys, and we like show like, up with like our giant smile, like,
what
oh
is
my
the
god
reason?
Yeah, you're like out of control, you're weak, you're poor, like that is kind of like the impression I get.
No, but it's so true. Now that I think about it, it's like everything needs to have a reason for
even if it's not French evolutionary people. And it's truly just social pass down of customs. Like, I'm sure if you raised a genetically French child in the US, they would just have all the American traits. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
I doubt this is like genetic.
Yeah, but it is true that everything not everything, but most things have to have some sort of a reason, right? Like,
that's why I like the culture map, because it actually starts to explain each culture has developed that trait.
It's true that I do think, and I'm just thinking like professionally, like even like starting a business in the US, like when you hear all the CEOs like give their keynote speeches, like, I just had a dream and I believed in myself, and that's how. And then like a French person where you're like, we should start a business, they're like, absolutely not. How much, you know, they're just so much more rational about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and of course, Americans are too. I'm not saying, I'm like generalizing, but it's true that when you speak to a CEO of a company or someone who has done something crazy in the United States, they always sell it to you in that, like, I had a dream. I knew I believed in myself. It's very all or nothing. Yes. Yeah. And it's very like sentimental. It's never, I mean, and again, this is how they sell the dream. Maybe they actually were super rational like an emotional with coming
hook. Up. Yeah.
But I can't imagine a French CEO being like, I believe in you because I believed in me and I had a dream. Like, I just can't picture that speech. Like,
it's a job.
Yeah, they'd be like, we are down 30%. What are you going to do? You know, like, it's just more like there's more rationale behind it. And it's more like intellectual. Whereas I think a lot of like the big thinkers in the United States or like the big, you know, CEOs or whatever, the Steve Jobs of the world always present as like, I knew I wanted to change the world. Yeah. And it's like, okay, sure. So it's so funny.
Did you remember in the culture map, I'm going to say this wrong, but they talk about German versus US PowerPoint presentations. I don't know if you remember this part, but I thought it was so interesting. And in the US, what really works, and I mean, I've done a roughly 10 million presentation decks, you know, for new business and stuff, is basically like sell the big idea. Start off with a bang, be like, we're going to change the world. Yeah. Here's how we're going to do it. And then give a couple bullet points of how that's going to work.
Yeah.
In Germany, if you do that, they immediately distrust you. Ah. So Germany wants like 10 slides before the idea that gives very concrete.
Where you set up why the idea is good.
And I'll be honest, weirdly, my brain works more the German way. And so I've had so many problems with new business presentations for massive brands, because they want to hear like this massive idea. And I'm always like, well, you can't really do that without these three steps before.
So that's so funny, because I actually had a German girl on my team at one point, and it was extremely difficult to manage her. Yeah. She was so by the book.
Yep. Yeah.
It was, and again, I feel like culturally I'm very American. The way I manage is very American, and I'm that way. I actually took in my last company, they sent me to London twice to do like presentation classes. And
I remember that. Yeah.
And yeah, the first thing they tell you is like, you need to start with like a crazy fact, like 2 billion people are on social media right now, like, or something crazy like that. And then you get into like why you're doing what you're doing, essentially. And in my case, I was like, I need to sell my department more to these brands, right? Mm-hmm. So they use us. And so they were like, yeah, start with something crazy. So you hook them and then like get into like why they should hire you. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of how and this was in London. So I don't know if they're using like an American approach or if
that seems more UK, like the American approach. Yeah.
But it's true, because they showed us examples of like all these people who do like keynote speeches and how they kind of always start with like either an emotional hook, like, I almost died last year, but this saved me.
It's
and
like a TED, like, TEDx speech.
And so it was really interesting to learn that. But then, when I had this German girl on my team, and it was super difficult to work with her because she was so inflexible. It was like, if it wasn't, for example, if it wasn't on the brief, she's like, we can't do that. It's not on the brief. And I'm like, you sometimes got to think outside the box, girly. You know, like, we got to work around the problem. And so it was just like so very like, and like, she would not budge. Yeah. Whereas like, when I worked with like, the rest of my team that was American, I'd be like, guys, scrap everything, we're gonna do this instead. Be like, sure, okay.
Like, apparently in Germany you'll get yelled at if you jaywalk. Have you heard about this?
I'm sure. Can they like to shame people when they do something illegal,
like a little bit like off. Yeah. The other thing I thought was interesting is to this like warmth and like egregious displays of emotion is apparently a big part of the post-revolution, which makes a lot of sense. There was a lot of suspicion of other people, and that's when they started to develop a lot of skepticism around anything that was excess. So too much. So everything had to be kind of more like moderated. So if you were like overly wealthy, overly passionate, overly chaotic, it's just, it was considered suspicious. So you're supposed to be like more reserved, more subtle, more restrained, also more minimalist.
You don't want to get killed.
You don't want to stand out. You don't want to like, exactly. I don't know if you, like, I'm sure you have, but like read a million. I've like, you know, all these books on the revolution. And it was just like things would sway so quickly. Exactly. So like you could stand out and it would be in a good way for 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden someone would turn like, against
is
you.
Is she rich? Should we kill
and
her?
And then it would be exactly. You look like possessed when you said that. And like in such a, it could be a negative way. So I see that because I see every time I show up anywhere with French people, I can just sense them being like, whoa, too much. Like every time I get into a conversation.
It's true that I do think like, cause I've met like, a handful of like really wealthy people here, and like you can't really tell that they're wealthy just unless you know them.
Yeah. Oh, so like minimalist too.
Yeah, they're not flashy about their wealth. They don't really talk about money, and they're very like, I mean, there's subtle things you can tell that they probably have money, especially like where they live and stuff like that. But they're not like flashing, you know, the Louis Vuitton like monogram.
They're not from Miami. They're not Miami.
Yeah, which is so funny. I mean, not funny, but it's so interesting again to see like the cultural differences. Like, I think a lot of Americans, unless you're like old money, but a lot of Americans use like to flash that, like symbols, and like to like people know that I have money. Whereas I think people that are really wealthy in France, and again, I'm talking more like old money, are a little more like discreet about it, and you won't really know it unless you're like really in their inner circle. Mm-hmm. And even then, they're not gonna be like, I'm rich, but there will be signs, mm-hmm. you know.
There will be signs. I wonder if that ties into like, I mean, our next topic is about compliments. I wonder if that ties into like this unspoken, because you know, in the U.S. we're always like, oh my god, I love your bag. Oh my god, I love your shoes. And here, it just feels so impertinent if you do it.
I did that to a French girl the other day in my new corporate experience. I like saw her and I thought she had a cute outfit. I'm like, oh my god, you look so cute today. And she kind of just like ignored it, which is fine. Like I. And then I said, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh my god, did I offend her? Did I say something I shouldn't have?
Okay. So this line I found that I thought was so interesting to the point of, did I offend her? The quote was, there's a strong cultural idea in France that one should not impose on others, whether that's emotionally, physically, or conversationally. Now, I find that so interesting because here I even feel like I'm being pushy or rude if I go to pet someone's dog without asking. Like,
I always ask.
It's in the U.S. I would basically almost steal someone's dog, and everyone's like, oh, just take him for a day. Yeah. Like, truly, people are so much more flexible. And I also think the notion of conversationally, imposing on someone conversationally, so small talk, turning to someone in line, what I call stranger energy, is just seen as suspicious or... I don't know. Like
what is that you read that like if you're in a line, you shouldn't talk to people because it's like,
oh my god. Time. Yeah, I was asking ChatGPT because I was curious about some things that are considered rude here that aren't rude in the US. And it was like talking to someone if you're waiting in line. It said the line is a sacred space. Now, I think chatty might be a little.
No, but I believe it. It's true. Like you don't go out of your way to talk to people. And the way that the compliment dilemma between, you know, Americans and French people, it's so different. It's like it really touches every single thing. And one of the examples in the culture map that I'm sure you remember from the book was this French girl who moves to Chicago, I think it is, to work for like an international company. And she's been in the position for like 6 months and she does her like mid-year review. And the manager, who's American, basically gives her a compliment sandwich and says, you've been doing so good in this thing and this is great. You could improve here. And then this other thing is great, too. And so she left the meeting being like, oh, I'm killing it.
Perfect. And then in France, they would never give a compliment.
Right.
For, and then, for the sake of giving a compliment, for the sake of making a sandwich.
Exactly. And then apparently the American manager was like super frustrated. She's like, I'm giving her feedback and she's not taking it. And it was because she was giving her a compliment sandwich. The French girl was only hearing the positive. And she was like, oh, I'm killing it. I don't have to improve in anything. So it's like so interesting. That section
gave me so much anxiety because it's so true that how quickly you could just fail at your job because you're not understanding because of just communication cues.
And then the other example that I thought was funny was like it was a French team and an American team, and they were all jumping in a Zoom call. And I guess the person leading the call was American and was like, hi, everyone. How's everyone doing? I'm so happy to be here and see all of you. And then the French person like didn't say this in the meeting, but like thought about it because they put it in the book. It's like, I'm not happy to be here. I don't want to be in the Zoom call.
I guess it's just not like saying, there's like no point to say nice things just to say nice things. There's like niceties. Yeah, there's just none.
Let's just be straight to the point. Like, what's the presentation? We got to fit in. You know, and I do think it's true that when you have like, when you work with Americans, they're like, I just want to say I'm so proud of the team and everything we've accomplished. We're like, I don't think they really do that here.
No,
like,
we have a French manager. We were talking about how, again, we should just have made this episode in the culture map, but how in the culture map, she talks about her son coming back from school with like 20 gold stars on his paper from the US.
Yeah.
And then he comes back from France and it's like a million markups. Yeah. And it's true. I mean, do you know what I graduated with after high school? My GPA?
No.
4.3.
That's amazing.
No, but you shouldn't be allowed to go above 4.0. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Also, like, why was I allowed to go above the top. But we never do that here.
I think that's actually like a really good indicator and explanation, because I think like you're trying to figure out like what's the root of this, like why are they this way. And I think if you grew up going to school in the school system in France, and like no one ever tells you like you're doing amazing,
no,
sweetie.
But you know what I, and then what I learned is like the complete inverse of that, that you get graded out of 20 here.
Yeah.
And the people who go to school here say they would never get above a 16.
Yeah.
Like you would never get above a 16.
But that's what I'm saying. They're, that's crazy. And they never get, you never, they never get like awesome, you're doing amazing. And even when you're failing, like nice try. Where in the US you'd be failing, be like, at least you tried.
Yep.
Here it's like you could be killing it and the teacher is going to be like, you're okay.
But we literally had found a line when we were doing research. Yeah. The line was, when I say okay, you should hear, quote, very good.
Yeah. Well, that, well, that honestly, and this happened to my team.
Insane.
When I was in corporate France and we would present to French clients and they would come back and say like, okay, sounds good. And my team would be like, what the hell? We spent so much time on this idea. They were so cool. Everybody was so excited. And I had to constantly remind them, guys, sounds good is excellent for them. They're never gonna give us the compliments that we seek.
Oh, so painful.
It is painful, but I think you just have to like because if you don't reframe your mindset around it, you're just gonna be constantly offended and sad. So I just, and it's hard because obviously like when you grow up in the United States and you're used to people, everyone telling you you're amazing, this presentation was incredible, you killed it, you're the best person in the world.
Dopamine levels, where like if you don't get that level of compliment, then here it's like you can barely function. That's why I'm like, I need it.
I always tell people, I'm like, what have you learned since moving to France? I'm like, I've been humbled in every way possible. So I think that's like also a big thing. It's just like you just have to reframe your mind. And I had to like remind myself too, but I constantly told my team, I was like, guys, a sounds good is incredible. Like
wild.
A pas mal is magnifique, j'adore, you know, like we're never going to get that from a French corporate
imagine
person.
Imagine a French person saying magnifique.
I would die. I'd be like, I can retire.
I'm it would just killing be wild. Well, also on the note of not imposing conversationally, which I still find to me, that's like the root of so much of this. I think I've talked about this in the podcast as well. I was told by two separate guys on dates that I ask, and they didn't even frame it as like a lot of questions. It was like too many questions. Like the way it was framed was it's too much.
Yeah.
And I mean, I read How to Win Friends and Influence People, and I'm sure anyone who read that knows that the number one thing he teaches you is ask questions. And he's like, anyone will like you if you ask questions. Now, in France, it's not considered...
That's not going to help.
It's not considered polite because it's considered prying. So yeah. If you're like, you know, I am someone who like 2 minutes after meeting them will be like, all right, tell me about the breakup. Like, how's it going? Or I want to understand things about their family or where they're from. Right. I don't know if you noticed this, Danny, but like when you're talking to a service person and... you have like a back and forth, you'll do like, ah, il fait beau aujourd'hui. And then you'll be like, ah, like, oui, très beau. And then you'll try to go one step further, like,
and be like,
vous allez faire quoi? Oh, together. And then they'll just,
they'll be like, whoa.
Shut, exactly.
Calm
they
down.
Shut down. They completely are like, nope, I'm done.
That's happened to me. I do that a lot with bartenders here. And they're always like, why are you talking to me?
We'll go one, but yeah.
Because when me and Paul go to get a drink, or especially if it's like in our neighborhood, because, you know, we want to be like, regular or somewhere,
yeah.
Right?
I got my dream.
And in New York, it was so easy to do that. And they would talk to you and you would be like almost like friends with the bartender or whatever. And I've noticed that when I do that here with bartenders, they're always like they'll be nice, like you said, two things. So they'll give me two questions. And then when I get into the third, they're like, okay,
it's
that's
so
it.
Embarrassing because you're like, did I bore you? And it's like, no, they just can't.
No, they just, that's to them, it's like, I don't need to do this.
Yeah. Like, well, it actually brings us to our next topic, which is service culture. And there was this line that we came across. It was like, they're not the shopkeeper, the store, the server. They're not there to charm you. They expect a lot of respect and equal respect for their role. And they're also not there to be subservient. And they were, and one of the things we came across was saying that smiling can often be viewed as subservient. And so they were talking about how service people here don't want to be seen as lesser than, which I really feel that in restaurants, like in the US, I feel like the server will live and die for you in that 1 hour exchange.
Oh, for sure.
Whereas here, they're like, you ask for water, you're going to have to ask 16 yeah. more times before you get that water.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think. I agree. I think in the U.S. now I'm like so not used to it. So now when I go back to the U.S. and someone's being too nice to me, I'm like, you're just trying to get, you're just trying to upsell me on shit. I don't trust you. That's like my Frenchness same. Coming in. And here now I almost feel like if you get a sign of, you know, politeness from the waiter, you're like, I fucking made it, you know.
If I get like a little joke, that's from
exactly
it happened.
Yeah. Or like if they get you a table before, like, I don't know, like it doesn't happen often. But I do think the service industry has changed and it's a little more international now, so I yes. think
Agreed.
I do always take note and remember of like places that have excellent service or just like a nice person behind the counter or whatever it is. And I make it a point to want to go to that place. Mm-hmm. And or I've had to, I mean, we've been to a very trendy place in the 11th, which we will not name, where we had terrible service, but it was so bad. It was comical. Mm. It was almost like a comedy at this point. And I would go back because the food was good.
Right.
And also I was just like, whatever. The guy dropped a tray of food on top of me. Who cares? You know? Didn't apologize either. Who cares?
I was trying to remember what you were talking
about.
It
was an attitude.
Like, oh, I know now. Oh, dropped the food, the tray of food on us, and then was mad at us that he dropped the tray of food on us.
And I was like, sir, I have like a crab leg in my bra. It was,
oh my god, it was like it was a shrimp cocktail.
Oh, sorry, shrimp cocktail.
No, but it's true. It was like the worst possible thing you could drop on someone. But it's interesting because one of the things my parents used to live here, and one of the things they'd always tell me is servers here, it's a career. And actually, I think with the rise of food as such a, I don't know, a clout world, especially in New York, but of course across the U.S., now more and more, it's a career to work in restaurants. Usually it's like work your way up to chef though and be like the chef of a restaurant, but here it is really a career to be a server. Like you'll have those kind of older men in some of the bistros, like I love Chez Denise and by Chatelet, and some men, they're like, I mean, they take it really seriously. It's their career. It's not like something they do before they want to become an actor.
Yeah,
you know. And I think I do love that aspect. I'm really uncomfortable with going into places where people feel really subservient, like a spa where they're like, what can I get you?
Yeah.
So I do like the kind of like same level, but it does take an adjustment because they're not going to do anything and bend over backwards to make you happy. You know,
and in some cases, a lot of Americans, you know, get offended when they come here by a server, and it's just like, but what did you ask? And not to blame the person, but I've seen it. I've been a victim of it myself, where I go into, you have to read the room.
You ask for this, like a million adjustments to the meal.
That, no. You like, what we talk about, like if you go to like a really old school restaurant like and you're like, can I get oat milk? They're going to be like, they're literally going to be like, no.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be like, no, I'm so sorry. We don't have, they're just going to be like, no. And look at you like you're an insane person and walk away. Or what happened to me the first time I came to France is I went into a brasserie with my friend. We were very American. I don't even think we said bonjour to anyone, which fair enough. It's on us. Right. And I try to order the entrecote, I think it was. And the guy goes like, no. And I go, what? Why? And he's like, you're American. You're going to order it well done. And I was like, I was not. You fucking asshole. But okay. And so then I told him, I was like, wild. And I remember I told him, I was like, I'm not going to order it well done. And he's like, okay, then you can have it. But it was like, almost did you pass the test?
That is wild.
And so to me, I mean,
that is so wild. That is like the absolute opposite of the customer is always right. It's actually like you were 100% like wrong.
And in their minds, and the way I try to see it is like when you ask for oat milk or when you ask for like a well-done steak, you're offending them first. So that's why they're responding that way.
So actually one of the examples when I was asking for some examples of things that are rude here versus not, then they said telling the chef, well, one, sending back something for not being cooked properly.
Never.
That's really offensive.
Never.
And then two, they were like saying that you're vegan at the start of a meal. And they were saying that ultimately like it's leading with offense, leading with, yes, I don't like anything you're going to serve me.
Exactly.
Whereas in the US, I think it would be a courtesy to have them make it the way that you would eat, you know?
But that's what I'm saying. And I think culturally, like Americans and maybe other cultures too, like when you, like you said, like the customer's always right. If you're going to go get a BLT, but you want to take the B and the T out, they're going to be like, sure, no problem, of course. Here, they're going to be like, then why are you ordering this? You know, like they're going to be like, I don't understand. So yeah, so I think it's just really funny. And I'm not saying like one is right or wrong, but if you go into a brasserie and there's like an old school waiter and you offend them by saying, do you have almond milk? And he says no and looks at you in a crazy way. It's because you offended him first by asking for the almond milk. And again, I'm not saying either or
it's
right or wrong.
It's actually such an interesting way to think about it in terms of offending is basically saying like, nothing you have is good enough for me. I'm going to lead with that, you know?
Exactly. And it's also, and again, if you want to look at it deeper, it's like the way you do things is not, doesn't satisfy me.
Yeah,
so I'm going to change it.
Yeah.
And that's how they see it.
Before you even
exactly.
try. Yeah.
So, and so I just think you just have to read the room. And if you ask for the entrecote and they tell you no, you just have to be like, why?
Yeah. It's a cool reframe of mind. I feel like I've gotten to the point now, I agree with you, where I know we've talked about this a million times, but where I feel more comfortable here sometimes. What are your thoughts on judgmental, like the judgmentalness of French people, the how direct they are?
I mean... I think, again, it's a little bit like a historical thing. Like, they've been this way for so many years. So it's like, how are they going to change now? I am a person who, like, I find myself that I could be judgmental too. But I think the way they do it is a little, like, they judge every single thing. And sometimes I'm like, that's not
And they
really...
also say it out loud.
Yeah.
Well, that's they have a filter like, in that correct sense. You, yeah. And they'll, like, say it. Or they'll be like, my friend just visited here. She lives in Marseille. And her husband got his hair cut. And he got his haircut, and every single person she said was saying beaucoup mieux, which means like way better, way better. As like when he got his haircut, like it was like, yeah, exactly. Like you looked like garbage before. She's like, I don't know if you all needed to chime in with the exact same comment.
Yeah, again, I think it's like another cultural difference where like for them it's like not offensive if like someone tells you, do you like my outfit? I'll be like, no, it looks like shit. And that's like they're actually being nice by telling you that. Whereas like the American version of that would be like, oh my God, sweetie, you look amazing. Love it. You know, like, and I think that's something that actually like Paul always told me is like, why are you always complimenting each other? Like, that's fake. Like, you can't like everyone's outfit all the time. And like, he couldn't wrap his head around the fact that even when like I'm talking to my friends, I'm like, okay, love you, bye. It's like, you say love you to everyone. Like, all these like things.
Aww, Paul's jealous.
No, but it's true. And I've heard it from like multiple French people that are like, it can be genuine after a point, basically. Because it's like you're just giving these compliments out to anyone.
It's true. But if that's you the kind way of they level, to it. Me, it's like a scale system or like, you know, if you're doing it, I don't know. Like,
I wouldn't eventually personally give you a compliment if I didn't mean it. But I think the way that the French see it is like,
they do it so infrequently.
Like, exactly. Yeah. For them, they're like, I cannot comprehend that you like a person's outfit every single day of your life. Like, they cannot comprehend how that's true. And on the American side, it's like, I actually like everyone's outfit, so I'm going to say it. So it's just like, again, it's a difference of culture and the way we express the things we like.
Yeah.
And I think the judgmental part, again, I think it's in some ways them being nice, like them being like, you're going to change your outfit, no? It's not actually like an attack. It's just being like,
And they're less afraid. I think they're less afraid of offending people. They also have a proclivity towards confrontation and argument, but in a way that isn't you're both going to storm out of the room. They're just more comfortable with a degree of I say confrontation, but it's not like confrontation and screaming. It's like getting into a fight with your like Trump voting parents. They're huge on arguing here, debating. And they're trained in school to debate. They're trained that that's a form of respectful conversation. So I kind of think they all tie together, this notion of being really direct with someone, because in the US I think we're so soft and we're so easily hurt and we're so offended and we take everything personally. Where here it's just part of the culture to have very direct comments, bit of confrontation, but then also to leave the room totally fine, you know.
But also like in the US I think we talk a lot of shit behind people's back.
Agreed.
Like here someone will be like, you look like shit, your outfit looks like shit, and they'll be like, so you want to get brunch? And it's like a normal interaction. Whereas in the US, if someone says that to you, you're like, oh my God, you're never gonna guess what Gabby told me yesterday.
I agree.
What a bitch, you know. And like in, I feel like here they'll be like, hey, actually you're being a real bitch to me yesterday.
Well, you know, I think I told you this, but there was a friend I have who was at a medical office and she kept having these bad, she was like going to a medical office, and you know, of course the best people in the world are the front desk people at like a doctor's office, like, oh my God. And she kept going and they were so rude to her, and finally one day she just said, do you have a problem with me? In France. Now in the US those are fighting words.
Oh,
to me in the US you say you don't have a problem with me, it's like, we're gonna take it out bad. Hands.
Well, it also, if you're in the US and someone says that to you, that would be so like out of left field.
It's so, it would be so,
you'd be like, what?
Confrontational, such a big deal. And it would be an escalation,
of course.
Whereas here it was a de-escalation. And she said the second she said it, she put it word to, you know, she put a name to it, she identified what was happening, the woman totally backed down. And so she said every time now she gets into a situation where the person is being kind of unnecessarily rude, she'll just say like, do you have a problem with me right now? Like, is there a problem? And they'll shut down. And I find that so interesting because it's like to be on their level, you have to confront them with the same frankness and the same directness. And
I did have a coworker. This is a little left field, but it was maybe my third day at the job, and she's French, and she looks at me and she goes, huh, you have very large teeth. I remember. And I looked at her and I was like, what? And she was like, oh, it's okay, I have large teeth too. And I was like, I don't know if that was a compliment, an insult. I was so, that really, I was like, what the
as
fuck was this
also
interaction?
Has large teeth.
It was like, I don't understand what this was, but okay. So yeah.
I know there's other cultures. Like my best friend in high school was Chinese, and she like, every time she'd go back to China, her grandma would be like, you've gotten fat. Like every single time. And she was tiny, by the way. That's what I always thought was so funny.
I was just like, that really kind again. Of, I was like, I don't understand what that was, but yeah, I think something that we were talking about offline, and we found a little bit of this too. It's like the judgmental side of like being critical, like overly critical, because that's like also something that people complain, mm-hmm. French people being of, like they love to complain and they love to be critical of everything, and it's almost like in their DNA. It's like historical, and the reason it's what we're looking at is like the reason it's historical, or people say it's in their DNAs, and it's like it's never gonna change, is because it comes from back in like the monarchy days, right? Mm. Like when you were part, when the monarchy was basically the head of power in the country, they had like royal courts, and the way that you would be like cozy up to the king and be in a position of power in the court was to essentially like talk shit and judge people. And that's how you would navigate that environment and like makes rise sense. Up in the ranks. So essentially like social status, etiquette, and refinement were like paramount, and people were constantly judged by how they performed culturally. So like, if they were well spoken, if they dress well, if they had any wit or knowledge about different things. And so if you were like always on point, great, you were probably going to rise up in the ranks and be in like good standing with the king. If you made one mistake, oof, people would like judge the shit out of you, and those people would rise up in the ranks. So it's really interesting how it really is like kind of like a historical, and like basically like it cultivated a society where critical evaluation was a tool to navigate like the hierarchy,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
of the
sense.
Time. So
yeah.
It's that's why some people say like they're never going to change. This has been the case since like,
you it's know, like a defense, it's a protective times. Measure. Yeah.
Right.
For them to establish their place. It's interesting because I'm trying to think about how that compares to the US. I feel like in the US, it's more about like success, standing out, like strong displays of power versus nuanced displays of etiquette or sophistication, you know. I think
yeah
it's a little bit different.
What we were saying also, it's like these countries with like such rich histories and like monarchies and stuff like that tend to be a little snobbier, because again it's like it's been part of their culture for so long, whereas like places like you were saying, like Australia or like even the United States, like we were kind of like the rebels in yeah. some way. We're like, we don't want a king, and we don't care about, like, I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't any snobby Americans, but it is true that we take ourselves a little less seriously.
Yeah, I mean, this is because we have this whole section on snobbery, oh, and also
which
not
is
wanting
the next one, yeah,
perfect, and not wanting to be made fun of. And this has been a really, really hard cultural adjustment for me. I grew up in a very teasing, like self-deprecating plus mocking family. So the way that we communicate love, the way that we show that we're chill, like down to hang and fun, is you kind of rib on each other.
Right.
And I do that with friends, and I've always kind of been that way. And coming here and, you know, dating specifically has been hard, because like I'll make a little jab and they're perfectly able, French people are perfectly able to judge and make comments and assessments of other people. But the second you say something very obvious and blunt about the culture, like I always joke that you tell a French person they smoke a lot and they'll just go crazy. They're like, well, we really don't smoke that much. And it's like, it just doesn't make any sense. And I just find it to be one of the harder things to accept, but it makes more sense in terms of these countries that have been rebels. Like Australians, to me, Scottish people are so good at making fun of themselves. But yeah, they've been the rebels. They've been kind of outside of, you know, kind of classical society.
I think I totally agree. And I actually experienced that firsthand, because when I went viral on TikTok, one of the times I went viral, I was making fun of French people. Not French people, but the whatever, long story. And it was funny because I have never been told so many times to go back to my country people like I was by French people. And I was laughing because I was like, guys, you make fun of this too. Why can't I do it? And it's kind of like, it's one of those like, we could do it, but you can't.
It's like,
kind of thing.
Like you make fun of your mom and then someone makes fun of your mom and you're like, how dare you?
Yeah. Or like a little brother's like, I can tease them, but you can't, kind of thing.
But it's always such a weird switch, because like they'll basically be saying the same thing.
Well, they love to complain. It's an Olympic sport.
That's exactly it. Wait, Denny, you've actually nailed it, because the most confusing thing about living in France is that they can complain all day about how annoying it is to live here, specifically Paris. And the second you say,
they're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
But it's weird because like, you the way that you're taught to bond is to complain in
exactly
order,
you're like, I want to be part of
only
it.
So far you can complain, this line is taking long. If you say anything about like French bureaucracy or like French behavior, immediately you'll watch them turn and
which
they'll
is
flip
like,
over.
Like in my eyes, if you want to be like assimilate to the culture or be part of the culture, you're going to be like, oh, you're complaining about Macron. I'm going to complain about Macron. It's whoa. You have Trump. Shut the fuck up. So yeah, it's really funny how they flip. And even Paul, so like when we first moved here, we were having some issues with like, I don't know, my car vitale, some sort of like French admin stuff. And Paul literally goes, I fucking hate French people. And I go, you said it. I did it. I was so shocked. Or like he said like fucking French people or something like that. And I was like, okay, let the record show. I did
That's
not say
so
that.
Funny. And like, I will be quoting it back to you, but
yeah,
in your words.
If I said that, I am sure that would be an issue, or that that would be like, okay, well, calm down. So go back funny. To America. You know, like, so it's just really funny how, yeah, the whole, like, we're going to complain about every single thing about our country, political system, bureaucracy, all these things. The moment you try to get into it with us, we're going to be like, that's not for you, kind of thing, which is really funny and interesting. So don't try to do that.
And they also really value like correctness. Like they really value being right and being and like calling something out if it's not done the proper way, which I find so interesting. And there was another line that was like they value correctness over accessibility. So it's like they're not going to. Yes. I think about that a lot because I think part of self-deprecation, part of, you know, being down to tease is making other people feel comfortable and making something feel more approachable. But if you say something and they don't believe it's correct, you know, like if you say something that you're seen as a joke and they're like, that's not actually technically correct.
Right.
They're going to be kind of like snobby 12-year-old boy about it. Then they're not going to kind of make a joke and be self-deprecating the way that we would. I don't know if you've ever run into this, but here it's really normal for a French person to correct you on your how you say a word. Where can you imagine in the US if someone comes up to you with an accent and you correct them on how to say a word?
I would never.
It just like wouldn't happen. And here they do it all the time. And but honestly, I kind of need the help, so I'm okay with it. But at first it really felt confrontational.
But again, and this is, I will die on this hill, and I say this to everyone who will listen to me. It's not a personal attack. It's like they truly feel like they're defending the quality of things and the cultural things. And my whole thing, I've always said this and I'm always going to say this. French people have been told for like many centuries in history that they're so good at everything. They're the best at this. They're the best in this. They're the best in fashion, best food, best art, like all these things. And for a long time, that was true.
Right.
But then I think because we said
technology
that to them. Yes.
Was invented.
They haven't, and they're still really good at a lot of things, but they're maybe not the best anymore. And I think because, you know, you grew up hearing these things and knowing these things and knowing like, oh, Paris is the most beautiful city in the world. We have the best museum in the world. We have like, you know, and so obviously you're like, that's true. This is my culture. I must defend it. I must like uphold the quality of it. So someone tries to speak French and they're butchering it, I cannot stand by and let them do that. It's, you know, like
yes
and I think it's
like
more
defender
like
of the
like I have to like quality control, you know, I can't just let like
that
a random
so
person
funny to quality control
and it's true. It is, I do think it's like they consider themselves like they need to uphold these like cultural like values and like aesthetics and excellence because they have been at the forefront of all these things for so long that you can't just be like, hey, I don't know, like a random country, I'm going to have like a couture line, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to be like, unless you're like maybe Italian or like potentially Spanish, like they're going to be like, no, what the fuck? We're French. We know more.
You know, more.
I think it's kind of like that whole, they've been at the forefront of so many of these industries and so many of these sectors. And so when someone tries to come in and play in that with them, they're going to be like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Unless you're like really good at it. But other than that, they're just like, no, I don't think you can do this. I mean, even think about all these like very exclusive industries, like the wine industry. It's very intimidating. If you're not an expert on it, you're not going to like talk about wine or, you know, talk about a wine tasting or a wine region because it's made to be very exclusive. It's made to be
and
like,
it's really hard to break into. It's why I do have an admiration for the U.S. in several different ways, because I think the U.S., well, it's very populist in a way where it's like, you know, the people decide what's good because of capitalism and because of, you know, having to keep things alive businesses alive. So like if a movie does really well but is super stupid, it's still considered valuable because it makes money, which is such a different thing here. Like a movie could make a ton of money and I think the society would still be like, that was shit. So like the film industry to me is not run by like demand, it's run by
people who want to preserve like certain cultural things. Like if you look at the wine industry here and the reason why they're so traditional and they don't like to like change anything up, it's because they've been doing the same thing for so many like centuries. They're like, why are we going to change it now? But then you see like an American company that comes out with like canned wine and they're killing it and they're like, what the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. Like a French brand could never, I mean, there are French canned wines too, but again, it's not the norm. And I think, and that's what I mean, where like they really want to preserve like tradition. And I think for French people in general, again, generalizing culturally, tradition is more important than innovation. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, again, that's why they're so protective of these things. And so that's why you're, when you're trying to break into these
things,
make fun of
these
things.
And also why they're so behind and why the ads look like they're from like 1992.
but that's, I mean, that's like kind of what you get. But then, yes, you're going to get like the best wine of your life in certain regions and not a shitty canned wine from like Publix.
Well, you're not going to get the American grocery store, which is like
where you have like 27 different kinds of oatmeal, you know, like.
So I have a question for you. What do you think? I have a couple ideas myself, but what do you think French people, or maybe we should say Parisians, are nicer or kinder at than Americans?
That's an interesting question. So I don't know if it's like a nicer thing or not, but I do think they're like, if you're in their inner circle or like if they accept you or if they like you or whatever it is, like once you're in, you're in. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I appreciate is like, they're going to be direct and honest with you. So if someone tells you like, I like your outfit, you're like, that's real.
Yeah. Maybe in terms of the big picture, that is actually maybe not nice, but kind.
And it's, you know, honest. Like they're never going to lie to you. I mean, again, exceptions, blah, blah, blah. But an American person would be like, oh my God, like, I love your skirt. It's like, that's the fucking ugliest skirt I've ever seen. Like a French person would never do that. Right. So like, I will say like in this, I don't know if it's again nicer or not, but I do think like whatever they tell you is always going to be honest. Hmm. So you could believe, you could believe whatever they're saying to you, I think, especially. That's
Yeah.
I would say that's it. How about you?
No, I agree with you on that front. I think I've heard that once they're your friend, they're extremely reliable. I mean, it's wild. I've been here so long, but I don't really have any like true French friends, which I think is like a really lovely trait. I would not say that the friends I made in New York, the acquaintances, I should say, were like super reliable if I was going through a hard situation. True. And so I think that's really lovely. I also will say, so my mom like can't walk very well, and seeing her come here and the way that French people treat elderly people is so remarkable. Yeah. I've never seen a culture be, I mean, maybe like Asian cultures I'm imagining, but I haven't gone. They're just so respectful. Like my mom fell once and it was like so many people rushed to help her.
That's so true.
They
always
make room for her. The waiters like are so rude to me. And then my mom walks in with these like walking sticks and they're immediately generous and kind and patient, and they help her up the stairs. It really, seeing the way that she encounters this city has made me so much more appreciative of French people. I just find it to be wonderful with her.
I agree. I think when it comes to elderly people, people with any kind of like physical disability, even pregnant women, they're
and
very
kids,
like,
they're also really sweet with kids.
Yeah. With kids too. Like they're very like, there's more patience. There's more like, patience, I've seen it in the bus too. Like they'll give up their seats, like no questions asked. Like, I was at the bus the other day and like a lady was like, there was no seats and there was like a pregnant lady, and there was like, Madame, ici. She was like calling her in the box, like, I have a seat for you. And I was, I remember thinking like, whoa, like that's so nice. And I remember like someone tried to see, she's like, no, c'est pour Madame. She was like, it's not for you, it's for the lady. And I was just like, it is true that there's this like weird, like I would say like politeness, because like, again, this is like strangers, but they will look out for them. And then, yeah, same thing with like when I see like an old man crossing, and when he started crossing, it was green, but then it turned red and there was a car. And I feel like, I mean, I don't know, maybe in the US they would have honked at him. And the guy was like, you know, like clearly struggling to walk faster. And the guy like popped out his like head out the window. He's like, ça va, like, pronto, like, take your time, no worries.
No
like,
way.
And
that's,
I was
so
like,
cute.
And the guy was like, because you could tell he was stressed.
Oh,
he was like, oh, fuck,
so
out the cross.
Cute.
And the car was, and the car was like, it's okay. He was like, it's okay, I'm going to wait. And I was just like,
elderly people crossing the street.
Yeah. So I think they're more polite with like strangers in certain cases for sure. And I think, yes, like you said, with kids too, they're maybe a little more patient. But I haven't really seen Americans be rude. outwardly to kids. I think it's like the case that they'll go on Twitter and post.
By the way, I've been rude outwardly to kids. So I mean, I've never. If they're like screaming.
I'll roll my eyes.
I'm not. Do you know what I did the other day? That was such an interesting experience. So it was a really long work day. I showed up late for a dinner, and I was crammed. It was 10 p.m. crammed next to a table of two screaming kids. So I was like, I can't. My, like, I guess autistic side was like, I can't handle the loud noises. So I went to the bar and I was like, hey, do you mind if we just eat at the bar? Because I was with a friend.
Right.
And I was like, y'a beaucoup de, I think I said like, y'a beaucoup des enfants or something. And he goes, oh no, pas des enfants. And he like mocked me. And I was like, it's like he didn't care at all. And it's like, it made me realize I'm very American about like space,
right,
and privacy and like wanting my quiet. You know, I feel like in the U.S. we're a little less tolerant around those types of things. And frankly, yeah, in New York, someone said to me once, like, you never see elderly people in New York. And it's true. And you see so many elderly people here.
Yeah.
And I think it just shows so much more about the city. Like, they make, even though Paris is not, I wouldn't find it handicap accessible.
At all.
I think the people, the community.
Yeah, they'll help
does
you.
Does make it more accessible they'll help for you. Elderly
when
people.
When I fucked up my knee, I was, like, getting help from, or people asking me, ça va? Like, see, random people.
That's cool.
Like, I think that's cool. And I was like, and I remember, like, I would wear my, when I had like my knee brace, I would wear it outside my pants because that guaranteed me a seat in the metro.
Oh, nice.
Because otherwise, like, no one would know, obviously.
Yep, and no one would help you. Yeah, that's true. Okay, I want to play a little tiny game with you. Basically, it's like, do you think you can dance? But it's, would you think this is rude?
Do you think you can dance?
Okay. So I'm going to ask you some things, and I'm going to ask you if you would think that this specific action is rude. Now, you can answer it as, I wouldn't have when I lived in the U.S., or like, I would now that I live in France, or okay, like, however you want.
Okay.
So caveat how you will. Okay, first one. Saying bonjour without making eye contact.
Do I think it's rude?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it's rude. I think it's weird because I love to eye contact people that I talk to. But I wouldn't necessarily think it's rude.
I'm dying at you, like, putting I love eye contact on my resume. Some facts about me. Love eye contact.
I love eye contact. I do love eye contact. No, I wouldn't necessarily, because I think a lot of people have problems with, like, they can't do eye contact with
it's
people.
It's a sign you're on the spectrum.
I didn't want to say it. That's your expertise.
Guys, I'm an expert on the spectrum because I watch Love on the Spectrum. Yeah. So
I know some people find that, like, socially, yeah, like, yeah, weird to,
do
look,
you know, the other
the
day?
Eye.
Oh, no. I shouldn't say this. Oh, but for some reason, the other day, I Googled, like, what's a normal amount of eye contact? Oh, I did because I was watching Love on the Spectrum, and they were, like, saying these are things that people really struggle with. And there's an actual time.
No, but you do eye contact.
But you know there's a time when it's too much and too little?
So yeah, average, I feel it. I feel it in my...
On the spectrum. Apparently, it's, like, 5 seconds on, 1 second off, or so. I definitely
look at, like, I can't just have like eye contact for 30 seconds. That would be too intimate.
3.3 seconds.
Yeah.
Research revealed the average optimal eye contact is 3.3 seconds. Okay. So then you kind of like glance away.
Yeah. You look at something else. You look up. You like.
That's so wild that we've evolved for like a normal thing.
I mean,
now Danny and I are like making that.
I know. Now I'm like, one, two, three. No, but I wouldn't find it rude. I think it's fine. How about you? Do you find it rude?
Like, blew out the system laughing so loud. Okay. Eating a sandwich while walking.
I don't think it's rude, but I do think people look at you crazy here.
More and more I'm noticing French people eating while walking.
Yeah, me too.
Now, eating a yogurt while walking would be like a different story.
I mean, eating on the metro,
I can't. Well, that's a sin that will never be forgiven, in my opinion.
I don't think it's the craziest thing you could do, and I mean, I wouldn't feel that comfortable doing it here. Paul and I, when we went to Tokyo, I think it was in Tokyo. Paul, we had something crazy, not crazy.
Do they not?
Oh no,
they started.
People moved away from us. And then I was like, Paul, put the sandwich away. And he was like, it was like an onigiri or something like that. And
onigiri meant to be eaten on the go?
It was.
What's the whole point?
I don't know. It was something
thing?
That wasn't offensive. It was like something that's
was
like, yeah, like a snack. We were on the, yeah.
Oh, we were on the subway. You were just walking on the street.
And we were eating a snack. I can't remember what it was. It wasn't
Danny,
something smelly.
Japanese subway.
It wasn't smelly. And literally people stood up and like moved away from us, and I was like, Paul, put it away.
Oh my yes.
So
god,
I was like, we're offending
too.
Everyone here.
That's so funny.
They're probably like these fucking Americans.
I mean, 100%. Okay, what about saying how are you to a cashier?
I think depends on the vibe.
Okay.
If the person is like warm and friendly, sure. But normally I try to keep small talk. I've learned to keep small talk
here. Yeah. When I go to Wisconsin, it's like, how are you? It's like literally like, I'll be there for an hour.
Oh, like, no. You have to be. Otherwise, in the US, it always takes me like a couple of days to like readjust. Cause like sometimes I'm like,
I know people think I'm cold now when I go back.
Same.
Yeah.
And so, but actually more New York, cause Miami people are kind of assholes.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. They're not very like warm and friendly in my opinion. Wisconsin is
like, I went on a walk with my kids this morning and I took the dog to the vet. Like that's the cash. That's a person like putting your stuff in a bag.
Well, yeah. And a lot of times you're instructed to make small talk. When I used to work at, Hollister.
Oh, like by your manager?
Yeah. When I used to work at Hollister, we had these two fragrances for men and women called Malaya and Jake. So Jake was men's, Malaya was girls. And I remember if you were in the front, because they definitely...
Oh, like a greeter?
Yeah, if you're a greeter, you were supposed to greet people. Or when you were doing the register, you were supposed to greet people like, have you met Malaya and Jake?
Oh my God, wait. We've talked about this before. Because we've talked about this before. Did I tell you the story? I definitely did. When what? I walked into Abercrombie. I'll never forget this experience. I walked into Abercrombie as a teenager and... this girl at the front says, she like mumbles something other under her breath. And I was like, sorry, what? And she goes, it's all about vintage. And I was like, okay, yes, thank you.
We had to say these lines. And I used to work in Miami where like no one speaks English. So like a person who didn't speak English would come up to the register to like check out. And then you'd be like, hi, have you met Malaya and Jake?
Oh.
And they'd be like, okay. And they were like, okay. They'd be like, gosh. And you'd be like, no. Do you want to try our perfumes? And then I'd be like, okay, never mind. You know? Oh,
this is so funny. Like, why were they training us to be like weird robots? Like, it's so weird.
Have you met Malaya and Jake? I'd be like, who the fuck are you?
Also, imagine sitting at the front of an Abercrombie store and you just have to repeat every time someone walks in, it's all about vintage.
All that to say, I think it depends on the vibe. But normally I would not say, how are you, Turkish? I would say like, bonjour and bonsoir and like, merci and stuff like that. But I wouldn't be like, ça va?
Well, cause I was telling you before, but I used to do that all the time when I would get into Ubers here. I'd go like, bonsoir, ça va? Because in the US you go like, hi, how are you? Good, how are you? Good, good. And then you get in, you don't ride, and then you ride in silence. Here, if you get a certain driver and you say, bonsoir, ça va? If you say that to a man who wants to talk to you in the back, ça va? It's like, it's kind of like, do you want to go on a date?
Yeah.
Like the way that ça va, it's I learned the hard way that ça va is like, they're like, oh, whoa, she wants to talk. She really wants to talk. I'm going to tell her all about my dating history and everyone I've ever been with.
That's happened to me. And then I'm like, fuck, now I have to speak French for like the next 20 minutes. Oh. And they're like,
and then I'm going to have to like turn down his advances. It's so strange. So yeah, wouldn't have considered it odd before. Now I consider it odd. What about, this one is so interesting. What about wearing headphones while grocery shopping?
Oh, I wear headphones all the time.
Same. Did you know that was rude?
I don't care.
I do now when they ask me a question and I go, como? And I have to take it off and I watch them just like roll their eyes at me.
I don't
me.
Care. This is my time.
I was like, why are you asking me for something that's not a bag or the receipt?
I'm sorry. If you could see I'm wearing headphones, don't come up to me.
You know what I was thinking recently? Do you think part of the reason that so many people are wearing corded headphones is to make like an explicit comment, I don't want to be spoken to?
I mean, that's sort of the reason I wear the...
You wear wired headphones?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, my AirPods are also like 5 years old and they don't really work that they don't work well. And I was just like, I just refuse to give Apple my money again. I just feel like I'm always buying Apple products and they don't really last that long.
2 years.
Yeah. So then I'm wearing the wired headphones and I still get people, yes, that's like, stop me and ask me a question. I'm like, girl, like the headphones are there for a reason. So, and especially at work, I actually have the ones I use for potting, and I would wear those specifically for people to understand. Right now, it's not a time to talk to me. Yeah. And people would still come and be like, hey, can I show you something real quick? And I'd be like,
got the headphones
that's
on,
why
babe.
I like to work from home. And so, yeah, I mean, I personally wouldn't find that rude. And if someone talks to me, I'll take my headphones off, obviously. Yeah. But I find that as like a shield, like, don't come talk to me.
Yep.
That's
get
how.
It.
How about
I
you?
I agree.
Yeah.
No, same.
I could see how that's rude, but I also
get it's
like,
rude because you're entering a public space. I sense it with French people. You're entering a public space. You're kind of like, but then saying, don't talk to me at the same time. But that's, to me, that's New York 101. So it's so.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if I wouldn't keep them off if I have to like interact, like when I'm going to go pay, I take them off.
I don't. I'm so rude.
I take them off when I'm like,
I click my little button that turns off my noise canceling.
I'll take like one off. And or like maybe two, depends on the situation, but like I'll engage with the person obviously, but I just don't think it's like that big of a deal. But I could see how people be offended by that.
Yeah, how Parisians would. Okay, last one for you. What about bragging about being busy?
You think that's rude? No, I don't think that's rude. That's most of my reality. I literally started my day being like, I am so tired. I've been working 12-hour days. I don't think that's rude. I think I like to tell people when I'm busy. So, like, if you don't get a text back from me, it's not, I'm not avoiding you. I'm just like, my brain is shutting down.
So yours is like
a
courtesy to say this is what I'm responding.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I know some people brag about it and be like, but then
well,
busy.
Like all of New York. You're basically not living. You're not worth time if you're not busy in New York.
For me, it's just more like, hey, girl, I haven't answered your Instagram message in 3 weeks because I... busy. My brain has melted and I cannot open another Excel sheet. But that's kind of the way I see it. But I could see how it could be annoying or rude to people, I guess.
Apparently French people think it means that you don't have good taste in life. Like you're not using your time properly.
They're not wrong. Yeah. I am working 12-hour days on a fucking spreadsheet.
Tell me once that when someone says I'm very busy, it was someone who was like burnt out on New York and doesn't find their... there's glory in working yourself to death. Say when someone says that they're very busy, their first reaction is, it sounds like you're not in control of your life.
Yeah, it sounds like you're not good at time management.
I think it's such a powerful thing. Like when someone in New York was like, I'm so busy, I can't. You're like, oh, interesting. It sounds like you're not in control of your life. I love that so much.
That is no, so
but
cunty.
I'm adding to that. Oh, it just sounds like
you're terrible at time management. Sounds like you're not enjoying life.
I mean, it's not wrong. Like,
no,
people
no,
who
they're
have 100%
right.
Lives, like, know when to take a break, know when to take vacation.
I'm
like,
not in control
not
of my
glamored.
Life right now. I signed up for a 3-month contract.
It's so true.
Lost control.
The more I
sold my soul
with,
to capitalism.
I mean, that's exactly it. The more I think about it, every time I say I use I'm busy as an excuse, it's like, no, I'm not in control. Like, this has power over me and is making me not able to make, like, because busy wouldn't be an excuse I'd make, like, I don't know. Busy to me is very much if I have to cancel on something right. Or if I'm not present. Again, we all go through phases. I obviously go through them.
I mean, for me, I don't find that offensive. And I think, again, when I say it or when I talk about it on social or when I text a friend being like, I haven't looked at my phone like consciously for the past 2 weeks. It's not to be like, I don't have time for you. It's just, well, kind of. It's to be like, no, not in a bad way. It's just like, I saw you texted me, but I don't have brain capacity right now to like, processes right now because I'm working 12-hour days mm-hmm. kind of thing. That's kind of the way I see it.
Yeah, makes sense.
Rather than like I've lost control of my life, which is also true, but I the way I see it is just more like as a warning.
Courtesy. Yeah,
hey, it's not personal.
Yeah,
I the only thing I can do is couch rot right now, so sorry.
Well, that's our little game for today. I thought this was interesting. I think I was kind of trying to look up some not research, but see if anything had been published recently on this. And The Guardian wrote an article called Why Are Parisians Nice Now?
Ah.
And it was so interesting.
What did they say?
Just basically about how not Paris is more international.
It is.
Parisians have just stopped being like quite the same level of...
For sure.
I don't know, Parisian.
I agree. I mean, the first time I came here was, I think, 2012 or 2011. I can't remember. And it was very French, which is such a stupid thing to say because you're in France. Duh. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of shocked at how... it didn't feel international at all. And like Paris being one of, if not the most visited city in the world, it didn't feel like a melting pot, like right. melting pot of cultures. It felt like you're in France and you're going to speak French. And if not, you know, like these, it just felt very French. Mm-hmm. And now obviously that I've been here and even since I moved here, I'm like, it has changed so much. And even when I was telling Paul, we were walking to dinner in my neighborhood and we were passing people and everybody was speaking like different languages and they're, so much English is being spoken in the streets and like different. And to me, I'm like, that could be good and that can be bad. Depends on how you look at it. I think it's kind of good to be in an international city. I appreciate international cities. I mean, I grew up in Miami, yep. New York, and now here. So I do think they're never going to lose the Frenchness. That's just like always going to be a part of Paris. But I do think it's becoming way more international. And with that, yes, potentially mm-hmm. Parisians are becoming friendlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. And I think... Now, I mean, I will offer the caveat that every time I have a friend who comes here for 3 days, I was like, I don't know. I had such a pleasant experience. Everyone was so nice. And it's true. If you're in specific areas,
yeah.
especially if you're American, they know
yeah,
you're
if you go to
tip.
Like Paul Burt for like
yeah,
dinner,
exactly.
you're going to have a good service.
Try to deal with like the tax system, the Marie, when you have a problem getting a visa renewed, like that's going to encounter a different type of experience. But to be honest, that's also going to give you a different experience in the US as well. So I think, I do think they're getting nicer, but I also don't think like a 2-day experience where you go to a dinner is like the perfect way to digest the culture. And I also think like what I've learned is there are just the special codes that unlock a nicer level of Parisian, like the simple thing of saying bonjour when you walk into a shop. So once you know the little hacks, I do think it opens up.
If they see you, I always, I agree with you. I will always die on that hill. If they see you even try, that's another thing. They're like polite in that sense. If they see you try, even if you're butchering certain things, I mean, of course, depends on the person, but the majority of French people / Parisians, if you're making an effort, even if in your broken French, to order a croissant or whatever it is, they're going to find that amusing and they're going to like try to help you out and meet you in the middle. Sometimes you'll get like an asshole every once in a while and they'll be like, I don't understand what you're saying to me. But if you come in with like a bonjour, bonsoir, merci, au revoir, like all that stuff, they appreciate the niceties. And if you don't do that, if you just walk in and you say, because I've seen Americans do this and I'm like, that's why people hate us. I've seen a group of Americans roll into a bar and be like, we're just going to take this table.
Yeah, my God.
Not like, hey, hello, bonjour, can we take...
No. In that way, you've bypassed so many niceties. You didn't say bonjour. We didn't say anything in French. And you, this is a huge one here, you disrespected their job, because here they like to be the barrier between your access to their job. So you say like, is a table available?
Yeah.
They'll get really annoyed if you just barge in. Taras is a bit different, but if you walk into a restaurant and just take a table.
Oh, no. Like, this was a group of older Americans in like a fancy whiskey bar, and they just like, we're just going to sit here. And then at that same whiskey bar, I was standing with like another person outside waiting for Uber or something. And there was another group of Americans trying to take a picture, and they're like, can you move?
Oh my God.
And I was like,
hello? Pedestrian.
Excuse me. Also, I could have been like, pardon.
These streets are public.
Je comprends pas? Je parle pas anglais? Like, what if I was French? I would have been like, go fuck yourself.
Oh yeah, you would have literally like up and down.
Can you move?
Eyes. You would have flicked your cigarette butt.
Like,
on
come them. On, dude. Like, you're in, well, not my city, but you're in their city. You know, like, at least be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm trying to take a picture. Do you mind? Come on, dude. And so I remember leaving that bar, I mean, like, this is why they hate us. I get it. I would hate us too. We're very entitled, and that's a problem. And I think that's the biggest issue, and that's when we sometimes face the rudeness of the French or the Parisians particularly, because I do think Americans feel, especially older Americans with money, very entitled. And they kind of like come to Paris and they think because they're paying a lot of money for a lot of things, they're entitled to everything. Yeah. And so I think that's also something to remember.
Yeah.
It's not your city.
Words to the wise, everyone. We'll keep us posted if you find anything interesting.
Yeah, let us know your rude encounters. Yeah. We'd love to read them.
Want
to
hear about you getting...
Let's see if you're the problem.
Okay, thanks guys for... Oh wait, sorry, we forgot we have more of the podcast left. Okay, time for our next segment. How do you not know this? Huh? This is a segment where we school each other on things we don't know about.
And the culture.
And the culture. Danny, what are you going to teach me?
I want to talk to you about, I mean, not really teach you because you already follow her, but it's this girl that I started following on Instagram. I think you follow her on TikTok though, because I am 75 and you're 15.
I think I started following her. She had like 300 followers.
Yeah.
I love her.
So her name is Amari, and her handle, I don't know on TikTok, but on Instagram is... Von Diller.
Yeah.
Basically wine dealer.
Yeah.
And she, I love her because she's just really fun. She basically like talks and posts about wine.
It's so hard to describe what she is and who she is because she has like this amazing energy.
She's a wine, according to her bio, she's a wine caterer.
Ooh, that's cool.
And
she like dances.
Yeah. And she's just silly. Fucking funny.
Yes.
And
her timing.
Everything. As someone who worked in corporate, specifically in wine and spirits, and everything we did was so fucking...
Well, you're just talking about
boring.
That. Everyone just taking themselves so seriously.
Oh my God! And like, we need to talk about the terroir, and I'm like,
unapproachable. Yeah,
no one knows what a fucking terroir is outside of France. So yeah, so I just really like her approach to wine because she makes wine feel... the when she talks about wine and the way she covers wine, it's just so funny and fun. But also, she talks about like the tasting notes in a way where I was like, I understand what you're saying. Like that makes sense to me. Whereas I think traditional wine companies or like wine, like sommeliers or whatever, are very like technical and like not warm. It's not inviting. Mm-hmm. And so I love accounts like hers that make wine feel like attainable and approachable. So anyway, she's hilarious. I think the way she talks about wine is really funny, but still educational. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she highlights a lot of like smaller brands also that I'm like, oh, that looks good. I
also like,
try that.
She tried one the other day and was like, this is disgusting.
Yeah, so I think it's just like really funny, and I really prefer this approach to wine. And I actually think we're gonna see maybe the industry shift, at least the content creator industry around wine and spirits, cool, maybe shift a little more. I would hope. That's my prediction. But anyway, really like her, and she's great. So follow her because you're going to have a good time.
Oh, she's so great.
Yeah. So what's yours?
I'm very influenced by her.
I know, me too.
She makes me want to be like sillier and stupider, but then also still smart. Like she's the perfect combo of all good personality traits.
Yeah, and she has a thing called Swirl School. So I guess she does like tastings and stuff where she teaches you.
Cool.
Yeah.
We should maybe do one. Cool. We're both failing today because we're not teaching anyone else anything new. I guess we're just talking about stuff that we're obsessed with. My favorite topic. Danny and I have both been watching this show called Overcompensating, and it's just fun. It's Benito Skinner, Benny Drama on Instagram. So and it's this whole, it's basically kind of like the pseudo story of his life being closeted and gay in college and how he was, you know, quote, overcompensating. But it's him, it's Mary Beth Barone. They have a podcast together called Ride.
The cast is impeccable.
Just like everyone you've ever found funny on TikTok. So it's just tons of zeitgeisty. It's just fun.
The writing is really good. I think Pat Regan wrote on it, by the way.
Oh, did he?
He did.
Yeah, and well, I was that would like, make of course. A lot of sense.
Pat, my old friend.
Yeah, my Pat.
But yeah, I think the casting is great. The story is hilarious, and it's like it's really one of those movies that, shows that makes you feel like, I don't know. I could see myself like binge watching this in like one afternoon and like. Well,
I
kind of
did. I was up till 2 a.m. watching it the other night.
Did you make it to episode 6?
No.
Okay.
I didn't watch it last night. I was too
drunk.
There's
a really good cameo. You're going to scream. I was like,
oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
There's so many good people on it. So many good people. Connie Britton, like the mom of TV. She's like a mom in everything. Oh my God, yeah.
I forgot his name.
Wait, I forgot his name too.
He's like the Twin Peaks guy.
Kyle something. Yeah. He's very, very quickly in it.
They're so good. He's so good. And you know, like sometimes when you see these TikTok stars, you're like, are they actually good at acting? And then when the show,
I thought everyone is really good at acting. I know. I thought so too.
Everybody has been
great. I was really honestly surprised. I thought that some of them were going to kind of phone it in, or, you know, they got the role because of being friends with friends. But I thought everyone they cast was really impressive and fit their role. Yeah.
I think that was like the
guy who was
surprise.
In White Lotus, the guy from last season. What's his name? I don't know.
Oh, he's like the boyfriend.
Douchiest guy. And it's such a different role than he plays.
I haven't watched last season yet. I will.
Oh no, it's from season 2.
Oh.
You don't remember him? He's like the son of the two older people.
That's him?
Yeah.
Did he grow up?
Adam DeMarco.
Yeah.
He's like him.
Yeah. I guess he was like such a like almost like shy younger
he was such a different character. That's why I'm like Holy really fuck. Impressed by him, because he was kind of shy. I was like, did he grow up? He grew up to become douchier. He's so terrible in this. His character is terrible.
It's very complex too, because when you get more, I mean, I'm not gonna spoil it for you, but when you get more into it, you realize why he's an asshole. Like, I mean, like, yeah, a lot of insecurities. But no, but it's like it's super interesting. Everybody's so far, like, the acting has been great, comedic timing has been, even Charlie XCX is in it, and she was actually hilarious too.
She's best friends with Benny's boyfriend. Okay.
And have you seen her episode yet?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I thought she was actually really funny too. I was that's exactly what
and
I
the music in the show
the music is so good.
They must have paid so much for the
for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, go if you need something light, kind of stupid, but then like good characters, worth following. It actually, I mean, this is me closing out on a dramatic note, but I really hated college. I was not a party girl. I started crying actually during the scene. There's a scene where he says like, I don't want to hang out with anyone but you. I'm like not having fun.
Aww.
And they're sitting on the pavement together eating pizza.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I started crying because
you're gonna cry later too.
Really?
They have a really nice moment after.
Because I just wish I'd had. You know, college was so painful for me because I really was not. I was laughing because there's a scene where he's like, was it fun? And he's like, no, I don't know. Everyone was like taking shots and these guys were like rapping at me. And I
that was
and
so
I,
funny.
And college to me was just like sticky floors. Guys groping you, nobody having good conversations. Yeah. I was like, does anyone want to talk about like the latest, you know, like no one wants to talk. And I really felt lonely. And I loved that they found this friendship where they could hang out and do chill stuff and talk about like Glee or whatever they want to talk about.
When I watch it back now, I'm like, college was awful. Like, I had a, okay, I didn't go, like, I went to, like, an art school, so I didn't have, like,
a full. So I went to a huge party school.
Yeah.
And I just was, I'm not a party girl.
Yeah, my best friend went to a party school, so I went to, like, her parties occasionally.
But you were
more
of a party girl than me.
Totally, yeah. But now that I watch it back, I'm like, you couldn't pay me enough to go back to college. I was like, I don't want to live this again. So, yeah, so I totally, no, but it's really cool. I really like, it's really funny. It is quite sexual, so don't watch it with your parents if you're uncomfortable. Don't watch it with your parents.
How old do you think our listeners are?
I don't know. No, because you know, almost watch Bridgerton with Paul's parents once.
No.
And thank God they were like, no, we're going to watch something else. Because then, like, I think it was season one where there was that. I can't remember what was it.
Everyone's going down and everyone else.
Exactly. So like all of Bridgerton. And I was like, oh my God, thank God. They were like, no, we're going to watch something else. Can you imagine me watching Bridgerton with, like, my French in-laws next to me?
My dad, every time. Every time something like literally of two people kiss on the TV when the show is on, he literally goes like this. You guys can't see it. He like slams the TV. He's like, oh, I can't handle this. And he like storms out of the room. Like, are you 11 years old? Like, it's so weird. But like, yeah. Oh my God, they're kissing. Like, well, we all need to like take a breath.
Totally. But I just like to say the warning because of that Bridgerton thing that almost.
You know,
so
funny you
me.
Say that because I was literally thinking that last night. Like, this seems like a network show, so it seems like it could be something you would watch with your family. But no, there's too much.
It's quite sexual.
There's too much.
Especially, I mean. It's like fine. It's not nothing crazy like for us, but I think yes, if you're watching it with a parent, it could get uncomfortable.
Too much, especially like, you know, a parent who's like not super open minded.
Totally. Yeah. But yeah, no, but it's such a good show. Definitely recommend. It's on Amazon Prime. Amazon?
Yes.
Prime?
Amazon Prime. Yeah.
I'm like, is that what's it called? Time for our next segment.
Snack and spiral. Spiral and snack. Okay, what are you snacking on?
I'm snacking on, I think it's called Ficelle.
Oh my God. It's love Ficelle. It's like a baby bee.
It's
baby
like
baguette.
Basically like a tiny baguette, like a skinny baguette. And then you can get different flavors. My local boulangerie only had fromage available. So I got that one.
So sad.
Normally I get lardon, which is bacon.
Chorizo sometimes.
Chorizo is really good as well. And then I think they have like an olive one, but I don't like olives. So I never touch
like
them.
Olives?
I love olive oil and olive, like olive... I was
going to
say scented.
Do you like dirty martinis?
Not really, no.
Interesting.
I don't like the taste of olives, but I like olive oil. I don't know, it's weird.
They're
anyway.
Very different taste, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the texture. I don't know. Anyway, it's so good because it's like a mini, like, little snack. It's great when you're hungover. It's great when you're, like, just want something to hold you over, but you don't want to be super full. And it's, like, kind of like the shape of, like, a baguette, but skinnier.
You know what's so good about them? The ratio.
Yeah.
Because you have more melted cheese. Crispy. So basically they're like a skinny baguette, but you have like all the external surface area of all the crispiness and the cheese. And then there's like a little less of the inside.
It's so good.
So it's just so, it's like a pizza crust covered in cheese.
Basically, that's the best way to describe it. It's like pizza, like a straight pizza crust with like whatever flavor you pick. Mm. And it's a great on the go snack because you can just like walk and eat it.
True.
Super
it's like a little drumstick.
And it's not like a croissant where it's like, there's just like croissant flakes everywhere and you're like full of that shit all over. It's like a baguette.
Yep.
But it's not like super flaky like
you
baguette.
Can also like bite off with your mouth.
Exactly.
It's hard to do that with just a bite.
So that's what I got. And I really like the Ficelle. And if you're ever in Paris, try it out.
I love them. I got one the other day and it was chorizo cheese.
Yeah.
Something else, but like the chorizo ratio is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, there was so much chorizo in it.
I'm also like a salty like breakfast person, so sometimes I don't want to have like a pan au chocolat for breakfast. Sometimes I want to get like something.
I find
like,
that
with
more
bacon.
Satiating too. Like,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, I love them. They're so good.
They're so good. Yeah. Anyway, what are you snacking on?
Donuts.
I know. I'm like eyeing them.
I did
like,
kind of fail you guys by not going to Dunkin' to get these donuts.
We need to go to Dunkin'. Yeah.
We do have to.
Maybe
go,
we should do like a Clashes like field trip again.
Yeah.
And do
it. Did you see there was a line?
Yeah, but honestly, did you see what people were getting?
No.
Like, the first, like, 100 people that went in or something. I don't know.
Free stuff?
Free coffee for the rest of the year. Yeah. I was like, that's not a bad deal.
I would maybe wait in the line for that. Except I'm sorry. Everyone's going to hate me. Okay. By the way, what we're talking about is that they opened a Dunkin' here.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We're like, they opened. Actually, they're opening a second one.
Wild. I sound so Wisconsin. I don't get it.
You don't get
Dunkin'? Because I don't like Dunkin' that much.
Well, fun fact about me, that was my first social media client when I worked at an agency in 2013.
Fun fact about me, when I took an unpaid internship off of Craigslist, I had to go
Craigslist?
There every morning, and that's why I work in PR, and every morning I had to take everyone's special orders and carry everything back from Dunkin', and I'm still scarred to this day about getting critiques about my orders.
Well, I had to pick up a specialty made donuts from Dunkin' Donuts every Friday to take pictures for their Instagram. Mm. And
so we both have Dunkin' drama.
I hate it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So we both have origin stories.
Yeah.
So I get bad vibes when I walk into Dunkin'. Also, same. I get like bad, like shit my pants in a train station vibes when I walk into Dunkin' as well.
I agree. I mean, I would be down to heal and go back.
Okay.
And confront my demons. A healing experience. We can go
confronting Dunkin' demons.
Because I think it's been long enough. But yeah, you know the funniest thing is like apparently like French people love Dunkin'.
Well,
and when I say this,
it's a market research.
My source is Paul and my friend's husband, who both said
they both like it.
They're both like, Paul said,
I don't get it because they like the donuts or they like the
coffee. Paul said, and I quote, I love their Boston cream. And I was like, how do you even know what a Boston
getting
cream
the donuts,
is?
I mean, it seems like it would be too sweet for a French person, but the coffee to me, I'm like, how would they ever like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think Dunkin' is like a little bit of like, has like a cult following, kind of like Starbucks. Like people that love their coffee. Yeah. Couldn't be me. I mean, to be fair, I don't think I've ever even had their coffee, so I don't really know if it's better.
I've
or
gotten
not.
Like the giant iced coffee things, but then I'm like, that brings me back to shit my pants in a train station.
Yeah. Exactly. It does give it all comes shit back my to pants energy. Everything on that menu does give shit my pants energy, but that's never stopped me from trying something. So like, I think we should still go.
I'm so sorry, Duncan. I'm so sorry. For
no,
our lack of
you
support.
Know what?
Give us free coffee for a year. We'll change our tune.
No, you know what happened? I messaged them to try to get like us to go. Yeah. Like, because they had an influencer event. And I was like, oh my God. And they were just like, they couldn't.
Can you guys follow us on Instagram and then we could get invited and stuff and do
Gabby,
research for you?
What? They couldn't care less about my. I didn't pitch anything, but I was like, oh my God, that was my first client. And we have a culture podcast. And they were like, just like, hearted it.
They liked it?
They're like, give me the hands.
I would rather they just read the hands.
And I was just like, well, fine. Anyway.
Rude. We gotta find Dunkin' PR.
So you got Bone Shaker donuts?
Got Bone Shaker donuts.
Which are
so what did
really
I get
good.
Here actually?
Oh, yeah, what are the flavors?
Okay, so
it looks so
I'm
good.
A vanilla girl and I got a vanilla one, but it's like vanilla cream.
Which
vanilla
one is the
frosting,
vanilla?
This one? I got the cinnamon one that looks like so kind of like a cronut.
It looks really good.
I got rhubarb, which I got a little smushed because I carried it on the bike. And then I got basically it's like almond butter and jelly and blueberry
Whoa.
Jelly. Yeah. So Danny
You're
and I are
gonna
feast.
Find that at Dunkin'.
You're not going to find that at Dunkin'.
No.
I'm really excited for these. And the woman there was so nice.
They're so nice. It's an American that owns it.
Well, it was a blonde woman who was American. So maybe it was.
I don't know if that's the owner, but I know Bone Shaker.
Oh my God. Breathing through your nose.
What?
Can you smell it?
No, but I'm sure. Anyway. Okay. So like, what's your spot? Do you want to spiral first?
Sure. Oh, I would love to spiral.
Spiral.
My spiral is men. Sneezing, you guys. Oh, yeah. I'm talking to any straight men, man. You could be queer as well, but I think it's mostly the straight men. You gotta get it under control. You have to do something about
what?
The sound levels.
Oh, the sound. Yeah.
Also, I need everyone to know they're not covering their mouths.
Ew.
So kind of two things here. One, you gotta try to get the sound. Did you see the Washington Post published an Instagram this week and it was how to sneeze more quietly? Guys, the way you sneeze more quietly is try to sneeze more quietly. Like if you try,
they always scare me.
I believe,
that's true.
I believe in you. Like if you try to sneeze more quietly, you'll do it. If you
I don't
didn't
think
grow
they
up,
care. That's a problem.
Well, that is exactly my point. Who cared about always be told they're gross and too much? Women.
Yeah.
Who learned to sneeze quietly. Women.
I sneeze so quietly. I didn't even realize it. Someone pointed it out to me the other day and I was like, I don't know. That's
yeah,
just
because
how I
God forbid we fucking make a noise and take up space. The men on my street. I want to tell everyone. I live on the sixth floor. The men
you
on my
them?
Street. Danny, I don't just hear them. They're going to break the windows. There's echoes.
I
there's
will say,
vibrations.
I agree with you.
Some of these men. I'm like,
Paul
guys,
scares me
partners?
All the time.
Paul scares me. Paul, then you know what? We need to.
But
have,
it's genetic because his dad is
no,
even
I don't
louder.
Believe that. I don't believe that.
His dad
it's not genetic.
Scares the shit out of me. Every
well,
time I sneeze.
They need to get out of control.
I'm like.
We need to have a.
Yeah,
what do they
Paul's
call it when you confront someone
scares me.
Drugs?
I would never tell him.
Oh, Paul's dad. But we can confront Paul.
Oh, yeah. I tell him all the time.
An intervention. Like, a sneeze intervention.
Yeah.
An intervention.
He's going to be like, I don't care. But yeah, no, I agree with you.
Just
men are out of control.
Open air? Into open
no,
air?
No, no, I think he covers his mouth, but he's just very loud.
Did they not learn the shoulder technique? Or
no.
The elbow technique? Sorry.
I don't know. Right. I just think, yeah, I think there's something deeper there.
There's something deeper.
There's something
and
deeper.
It's called everybody together now. Sexism.
Oh, I'm like misogyny.
Oh, what did you say? Yeah, misogyny, that as well. Okay, what are you doing?
I agree with you. I'm just going to talk again about LinkedIn and how much I had it. I hate it. So we were just talking earlier. I'm like, I just hate it because I think everyone's like super fake. And like, I know everyone's fake in every social media platform, but I think like LinkedIn is like overly fake because everyone's trying to get a job or try to get paid or trying to like seem like they're interesting, and then they like
seem like they're successful.
Yeah, and they're like, I created a deck, and they'll be like, I, along with this technology, I started a new, and I'm like, shut the fuck up. Anyway, so I recently posted like an update, which I never do, but I was like, so might as well.
I don't want to be that person, but it sounds like you're part of the problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, I gotta get jobs.
Play the game to win a game.
But it's so funny because I posted that update, and I would say like 90% of the reactions from people. No, I didn't go viral, but the people that were reacting, like clapping, celebrating, whatever the fuck, different things you can react to.
Your former boss who like used to like tell you what you hate.
Not even. It was like random people that I haven't talked to in like years, or like some people that are in this I didn't even know. And again, it's like, because you don't really give a fuck about me. You could care less if I'm alive or dead. You just want to be like in my like radar in case like something comes up or whatever. I mean, and that's the thing. I'm sure some people are nice and they actually care and they're like clapping for you for real. But I'm like, half of you haven't talked to me in 10 years, 15 years. Why are you, you know,
would it bother you as much if that same person liked your Instagram?
Depends, but not really. But I think Instagram is a little more, I think Instagram is more like, here's my outfit, here's my selfie, here's my dinner, mm-hmm. right? And I think LinkedIn is more like professional achievements. And it's like, again, I just think people are a little faker, and I almost like don't trust their motives. Because
I feel like when they're liking on LinkedIn, they want something from you. And they're like, that's how it feels. Instagram, like, it feels like they're more like a fan or like supportive. Fan's the wrong word, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, again, I find the way people speak on LinkedIn is very fake.
Oh, don't worry. It's not just you. I think everyone finds the way people speak.
Yeah. And I mean, there's obviously like exceptions to this rule. Like some people actually go there to like find like people. Like I have a former colleague who's always like pitching stories or asking people if they're interested in any covering any of these stories. She's an editor. So the way she uses it, I'm like, I get it, this is like part of your job, and you're using it very like directly for like a purpose. Like you're not hiding a different motive, right? But most people I think are on there to like be like, I don't know, to be fake. That's
everyone
kind of the way
to
I feel
me on LinkedIn, like a little kid who hasn't learned how to navigate like bragging about themselves without sounding like they're bragging about themselves. Like I thought we all had the same etiquette where we're like throwing our successes casually into conversation, and then LinkedIn to me it was like, hi, my name is Sarah, I'm really good at this, and I did this really well. I'm like, are you a 12-year-old girl?
I just hate just such a and I hate all the like all the learning moments. Like there's like a big influencer who always makes fun of LinkedIn, and I think his one was like, I was late to an interview because I ran over a dog, but then
he taught me about B2B marketing.
Yes. And so like, and then I stayed and helped the dog. So I texted the guy. I was like, I'm not going to make it, I'm helping the dog. He's like, congratulations, you passed the test. The dog was the CEO. So that's what I learned. So to me, like the funny thing is like, I see someone posting that like earnestly, and so that's the thing. That's the crazy thing. It's like I actually think like 90% of my feed is people talking like that, and that's why I can't take you seriously. So that's why I hate LinkedIn. I just think like we need to be real. We need to stop pretending like we know. Like we have all these like learning moments in our lives.
You should start the Be Real LinkedIn collab.
Be real. It's like every randomly you have
I
to
want
put
an app where you
job
have to say something bad about yourself before you say something good about yourself. I cannot handle this. Like I'm fantastic and amazing. It's that like, makes me want to throw up.
Yeah. So I mean, that's again, it's because I haven't really opened my LinkedIn in a while. And this is the first time
she's back, guys.
Now I'm back. Go like my go like and comment and subscribe to my LinkedIn page.
And she'll hate you a little bit when you do it.
Yep.
Okay, well, thanks for coming, everyone. We're going to go eat some donuts.
I know, I'm like looking at the donuts. Follow me on LinkedIn. What?
Fusel.
I guess Fusel and then donuts.
Dinner and then donuts.
Dinner and then dessert. Bye, everyone.
This was Clashes,
a podcast brought to you by two idiots.
Clearly. I don't know if I can laugh on cue.